Hello, everybody. Mike Malloy here. How you doing tonight? It's time to start locking people up. It really is. It's one thing to be a dumbass conservative. It's something else again to be a half-literate Republican. It's something else again to be a functionally illiterate. What do you call these people now? These militia patriot types. But it's way outside the bounds of what should be allowed in this country to have these kinds of threats that are going on now. So far, 10 members at last count, 10 members, Democratic members of the House, have been threatened with violence. It's not too difficult to track back where this stuff is coming from, just like the half-wit in Alabama who got caught, the one who's on disability and sucks money from the government while he posts stuff on his website that is anti-sucking stuff from the government. Go figure. But it's time to lock the bastards up. It is. It's time to hunt them down with civilian law enforcement. It's not time yet to call out the military, even though these are threats against constitutional officers of the United States. But it's time to call out the local police. And if the local police are peppered with these right-wing Nazis, then Eisenhower did, as Kennedy did, as Johnson did, then you have to bring the federal troops in if the local law enforcement is eaten up with this Nazi racism trash that's going on in this country right now. I mean, enough's enough. Enough's enough. A steady diet of incitement by Limbaugh and Beck and the rest of these filthy, filthy pigs on television and radio is starting to take a toll on the weaker-minded members of this fast-disintegrating culture of ours, the society of ours. And rather than leave it up to liberals or progressives to, you know, form groups to go out and track these right-wingers down and beat the living hell out of them, I think we ought to leave it at this point to law enforcement, if law enforcement's going to respond. But this is enough. You know, Beck was inciting his mob to violence on Fox today at the very same time that CNN was reporting the violent threats that had been made against Bart Stupak, all these other legislatures who are now under the protection of the FBI. Louise Slaughter, representative from upstate New York, received threats that snipers were going to kill her grandchildren and all the children of Democrats who voted for the bill. Now, I've gotten threats like that before against my 5.5-year-old daughter, Molly, and I've always said that people who make those kinds of threats, not only are they cowards, but they're sick in the head. And, you know, it's against the law to make those kinds of threats in most states in the union. But normally they're not carried out. These are made by males, white males, always white males, who are afraid of their own shadows, who are just terrified of their own shadows. And now it's reached into the ranks of white women. White women who are now giving over their souls to Glenn Beck. Beck needs to be removed from the airwaves. He really does. Enough's enough. He ought to be just taken off the airwaves permanently. And get rid of the son of a bitch. Put him someplace. Give him a website. Give him something to play with. But get him the hell off the air. Here's a sample of some of the calls made to Bart Stupak.
Congressman Stupak, you may be killing. You turncoat son of a.
You will rue the day you did this, Mr. Stupak. You are a disgusting man, and I hope you're haunted the rest of your living days.
You and your family are scum. You ought to fill your pockets with lead and jump into Potomac.
Is that all you got? That's all you decide. Yeah, we had to alter a lot of it because the language is being used. Now, remember what these guys have done, what these members of Congress have done to warrant this. And this is where it is absolutely imperative to get Beck off the air, because he is way across the line from free speech into insurrection. And we have laws against that. Limbaugh is too much of a jelly-faced coward to go as far as Beck has gone. Hannity just parrots whatever the Republicans tell him to parrot. But Beck, and to a lesser degree O'Reilly, these people need to be taken off the air. They really do. I mean, without a doubt, just removed. They're using the public airwaves. That's what they used to be called. They are operating under licenses granted by the federal government to various organizations in Beck's case, airwaves that are leased by Fox television or Fox Radio, whatever. I don't even know what radio network he's on. Whatever it is, they should be ashamed of themselves. But it's time to get them off the air. It really is. Permanently. Beck needs to be removed. I think O'Reilly needs to be removed. Hannity is harmless. Hannity's a joke. He's going to go to prison anyway once the investigation finds out whether or not Hannity's been fronting for a criminal enterprise that has been ripping off the wives, the widows of dead soldiers and those dead soldiers' children. If it is discovered that Hannity is guilty of what is being talked about, the fraud by this freedom phony organization set up by the convicted felon Oliver North, then and disgrace to the uniform of the United States Marine Corps, Oliver North, if it is found that Hannity is involved in this kind of a criminal enterprise, he'll lose. He'll be taken off the air too. Probably not by Fox News. Probably by 7 or 8 or 9 brothers of dead soldiers and Marines who decide to pay a visit to Sean Hannity and go over some of the numbers with him. If you know what I mean. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Huh? Because if there's one thing veterans don't like, especially combat veterans who have been sent to a war zone to do things that they don't want to talk about when they come home, one thing they don't like is to see the widows and children of their dead comrades being ripped off by organizations that say they are there to help the widows and the orphans. You know what I mean? Historically, in our country, when people who have done that are discovered, they're usually taken out and hanged. They are. And the crowd that gathers usually applauds the decision to remove this vermin from society. So if that's the case with Hannity, and who knows where the investigation would go, right, Sean? Ah, you little twit. That's a different story. But Glenn Beck needs to be removed from the air forever. He is crazy. He has crossed the line into inciting insurrection against the government. If he wants to lead a political movement to replace the current office holders with other office holders, then go right ahead, you jelly-faced bastard. But that's not what you're doing, Glenn. I know, Kathy. I said bastard. I didn't say the words I said I'm not going to say. There's my producer sitting on me like a wet hen. It's very difficult not to. These people just turn my stomach. They turn the stomachs of anybody who's a normal human being. But the threats are way beyond what you would expect in a civilized society, even this one. And this Nigel Coleman, who put Representative Thomas Perello's home address out on the his Twitter site. What do you call it? And then it turns out that it wasn't Representative Perillo's home address. It was his brother's. And somebody went out there and cut the gas line to the house. That's attempted murder. So Glenn Beck needs to be removed from the public airwaves. It needs to be done now. He also needs to be arrested and charged with inciting insurrection. It needs to be done now. The Justice Department needs to move on this rat bastard now. Now. Right now. Sound. You can hear me. What I'm doing wrong. When you keep driving and singing that same old funny song, you can tell me which way to go. I'm 3 times 7 and then some more. You can tell me, hey, like a dull knife, just think.
Hey, conservatives, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. We're going to be joined at the top of the next hour by Alan Grayson, a member of Congress from Florida's 8th congressional district that includes Disney World. This idiot teabagger decided to post the address of Representative Tom Perriello so that people annoyed with his health care vote could commit crimes against him. Only the address the moron put up there was the congressman's brother, and now federal and local authorities are investigating a severed gas line to the brother's house. The gas line led from a propane tank to a barbecue on the back porch. And Monday, the teabagger, Mike Troxell, said, if they would like to provide me with the address of Tom Perriello, then I'd be more than happy to take it down. Troxell then posted a long screed about how it was not his fault if the internets were wrong regarding addresses, right? Another teabagger, Nigel Coleman, wrote on his Facebook page, quote, this is Representative Thomas Stewart Price Perriello's home address. I ain't holding back anymore. According to a number of news reports, Nigel Coleman also wrote on another blog, since removed, quote, do you mean I posted his brother's address on my Facebook? Oh, well, collateral damage. Nigel Coleman later said that his choice of words was, quote, definitely in poor taste, end quote. It's just, I don't know. This is way beyond what you would expect in this country. And the people doing this, these teabaggers, these are Glenn Beck's posse. That's all. Beck is the cult leader of these sick slobs, most of whom are on some kind of government subsidy. They are. They're either getting either unemployment. Well, that's not government. But they're either getting Social Security or Medicare, or they're on Medicaid. They're getting some kind of welfare payment, either from the feds or the state, because nobody wants to hire them. And granted, a lot of jobs have been lost in this country. But, you know, when you have the kind of attitude that you will post the address of a sitting member of Congress so that somebody can go blow their house up, you're putting yourself right in the same company as Timothy McVeigh and people who commit acts of violence against innocent people. But this is what we've come to. Glenn Beck needs to be removed from the air. He must be removed from the air. And I would expect some sort of a movement to start to get him off the air. I don't know why it takes a movement. It should just be a matter of the Justice Department looking at what his programs are about and how he is inciting people to insurrection. And that is misuse of the public airwaves. And whether or not they could throw this pig in jail is, of course, immaterial to the idea that they can if they choose to get him off the air. It's not that difficult. Somebody as sick as Beck, somebody who wants to be a clown, that's one thing. And if anything, Beck is a clown. It's one thing to watch him bounce around while he's, I don't know, eating amphetamines or something. It's one thing to watch that while he jabs at chalkboards. But it's something else, again, to realize that what he's doing is inciting people to violence against a duly elected government, one that wasn't stolen. You know, and I'll say it again, where were you pigs when the government was stolen, when the presidency was stolen? Where were you pigs when the wealthy people in this country were getting massive tax breaks that we are now in hock for to $1-3 trillion? Where were you pigs? You cult pigs, which is what you are. But, you know, making threats against members of Congress is that's outside the boundaries of even these maniacs. It's one thing to issue stupid, cheesy emails to talk show hosts. I get those all the time. And the ones that make it through the filter we either put them on Malloy's Uncensored Mailbag or turn them over to the FBI or just read them and laugh. But it's something else again to threaten constitutional officers of the United States. So, teabaggers, go ahead. Keep doing it. Eventually, every single one of you, like rats, like cockroaches, are going to be removed from having any effect on a society that's struggling to keep itself together while you roaches and rats are trying to destroy what's left of a fairly good experiment. And you know this wouldn't be happening except for one thing, you pigs, and that is the fact that Barack Obama is not completely white enough for you roaches.
It's more Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Susan writes, Mike, I'm amazed at your restraint of language. Kathy must be working overtime. These people, the ones posting the addresses and inciting, and the ones committing the acts, are terrorists. They need to be arrested under the right-wing Patriot Act and treated exactly the way Bush treated all the Muslims he arrested. I'm hoping for a few choice words before the night is over. Susan. Come on. I can't do that. And I don't think I said the SOB word during the first segment, Kathy. I don't think I did. I stopped myself. Well, now, this is kind of interesting. I found this at JewishJournal.com. It's written by Rob Eshman, E-S-H-M-A-N, and it's titled Tea Party Dangers Ahead. This is a very, in my opinion, very valid point of view. We make the allusion on this program quite a bit to the brown shirts that were used by Hitler to beat up Jews and liberals and Democrats and communists and socialists before Hitler tired of them and had them all murdered, especially their leader, Erich Röhm. Is that who it was? Erich Röhm. And then all the brown shirts, of course, were as many as could be gotten, had their throats cut, and that was the end of the Night of the Long Knives. Is that what they called it? I don't know. Don't email me if I've got it wrong. Anyway, Rob Eshman writes, it will take a while to know for certain whether the Health Care Reform Act helped our country or hurt it. My sense is that, as with many pieces of sweeping legislation, it is the imperfect beginning of an important journey. But one immediate upside to last Sunday evening's vote, is the wet blanket it threw over the dangerous Volkfest called the Tea Party. I am no more paranoid than any Jew born after the Holocaust needs to be, but the Tea Partiers raised my internal Homeland Defense Code to orange. It started with the television images of Tea Partiers disrupting meetings, shouting down Congress members at town halls. As a Jew, the only place where I expect to see that kind of rude anti-democratic behavior is at a Knesset debate. Elsewhere, it alarms me. Little Jewish humor there. The Tea Party gathered steam, gaining momentum as President Obama stayed mostly behind the scene. By the time the weekend news reports emerged describing how tea baggers, I call them, he calls them, Tea Partiers heaped racial and other slurs on members of Congress like John Lewis and Barney Frank, my suspicions seemed vindicated. I suspected that if I scratched deep enough, I'd find that beneath the homophobia, the xenophobia, and racism, I'd find some good old-fashioned anti-Semitism. And I wasn't disappointed. This week, the New York Daily News reported that Tea Partiers roaming the halls of Congress left nasty notes about Rahm Emanuel and Representative Anthony Weiner, Democrat in New York, signed with a swastika. One note called Weiner Shlomo Weiner. Others have shared my concern. Conservative David Frum, who, by the way, is Jewish, on his blog, frumforum.com, blamed the Tea Partiers for the healthcare victory. He wrote, quote, "We followed the most radical voices in the party and the movement, and they led us to abject and irreversible defeat," end quote. As the Tea Party grew, I pulled out Eric Hoffer's book from 1951, The True Believer, the treatise on mass movements I used to help me determine whether I should be amused, concerned, or jump on a float piece to the Yukon. Hoffer was a Jewish longshoreman and autodidact, a witness to a brutal century who took a long, hard look at National Socialism and deduced a series of principles about those who led and follow such movements. Every word he wrote resonates today. True believers, he wrote, tend to be the, quote, new poor, people who throb with the ferment of frustration, end quote. In Germany and Italy, they were from the ruined middle class. The Tea Partiers have seen their net worth collapse, their jobs evaporate. Check. True believers seek a common enemy, preferably one they admire. Hoffer wrote, quote, "We cannot hate those we despise. An American's hatred for a fellow American, like Roosevelt, is far more virulent than any antipathy he can work up against foreigners," end quote. The Tea Partiers shout down insufficiently radical Republicans. Check. Hoffer wrote, quote, "The genius of a great leader consists in concentrating all hatred on a single foe. The ideal devil is a foreigner. To qualify as a devil, a domestic enemy must be given a foreign ancestry," end quote. Obama, birthers, Indonesia. Check. Finally, there is this. Hoffer wrote, quote, "There can be no mass movement without some deliberate misrepresentation of the facts," end quote. Death panels, wholesale abortion, government takeover, check. Where the Tea Party comes up short, of course, is in leadership. No great leader, using Hoffer standards, emerged possessed of an iron will, daring vision, boundless self-confidence, the capacity of winning and holding the utmost loyalty of a group of able lieutenants. That's all a quote from Hoffman or Hoffer. End quote. The Tea Party movement remains decentralized. The leaders of what Frum calls the Republican entertainment complex, that would be Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, Michelle Malkin, among others, they are less interested in leading troops than in selling books. Sarah Palin is out looking for a lucrative TV deal. So we should count our blessings. I still have dark imaginings of what would have happened if a true leader had risen among these true believers. That person would have had his or her reins on a tidal wave. Alexis de Tocqueville wrote in Democracy in America, quote, "I know of no countries in which revolutions are more dangerous than in democratic countries, because they may always create some evils that are permanent and unending," end quote. Rob Eshman writing at JewishJournal.com. Now, Eshman, of course, is a lot lighter on this topic than I would be. I think for the most part, with exceptions, the Anti-Defamation League or Southern Poverty Law Center, groups like that, the willingness to call something anti-Semitic is a bit reserved unless there's real anti-Semitism there. Now, I've been the object of charges of anti-Semitism because I criticize Israel, and I, you know, it's garbage, and I write it off, and I don't pay any attention to it. But there is such a thing as anti-Semitism, and once unleashed, it is as dangerous as racism unleashed, homophobia unleashed, anti-woman attitudes unleashed, and the teabaggers have entered into that realm. And, of course, Beck is encouraging them. Limbaugh is encouraging them. O'Reilly is encouraging them. Crazy Eyes Michelle Malkin is encouraging them. I wonder what Drudge is going to do. Drudge is Jewish. How long does Drudge think he can ride this tiger before it turns around and bites him on the ass? That's the part that I find interesting. Somebody like Drudge, who should know better. He should know better. Because he, to a far greater degree, since he is Jewish, to a far greater degree than the Gentiles who are stirring up this madness, Matt Drudge, understands. His family history goes back into that darkest chapter for the Jews, the eradication of Jews in Europe, which was Hitler's plan, and he damn near succeeded. So when you have somebody like Matt Drudge participating in the incitement, you got to wonder about the stability of Matt Drudge's mind, which is not very stable to begin with, I grant you. But getting back to the Gentiles who, or whatever they are, I don't know what they are. Mormons, Catholics, I don't know. The people who are deliberately being provocative. Now, you can make the argument that these swine will be with us because corporate America owns the medium in which they all appear. And you may be right. Demanding that they be taken off the air because they are involved now in inciting insurrection, maybe just, you know, whistling so much air. I mean, who's going to take the step to do that? Were I attorney general, I would do it in a heartbeat. I wouldn't hesitate. I would not hesitate. We're at a very, very delicate period in our history. The conflagration that Beck longs for. Beck wants to see people killing each other. He wants to, there's something almost sexual in that for the Glenn Becks, to see people fighting each other, murdering each other. Limbaugh is the same way, but these guys are multi-millionaires, so they feel very protected. They are out of the fray, and it's great sport to incite other people to fratricide or to internal murder and mayhem and disorder. They find this amusing, and they make money on it, and they sell books on it, and they get speaking fees on it, and it's incredible. Glenn Beck should be charged with insurrection, fomenting insurrection. He should be taken off the air. Truth is, this moron never should have been given a program to begin with on television. Thanks, Headline News. You know, CNN is the one who first unleashed this this sick bastard on the country. It's astonishing.
Gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Coming up after the break here at the top of the hour, we're going to be joined by Alan Grayson, who is a member of Congress from Florida's 8th Congressional District. He's the guy back in September during the debates leading to the passage of the Health Care Act in the House. He said during a speech, quote, "The Republican health care plan is this: don't get sick, and if you do get sick, die quickly," end quote. Now, of course, that was widely condemned by Republicans. Don't ask me why. It's absolutely true, and Republicans are scum-sucking swine anyway. But according to Grayson, his constituents, he comes from a basically Republican district. He defeated a 3- or 4-term Republican to get into Congress. But according to Grayson, his remarks were well received by his constituents. He also said on in a House floor speech, he said, quote, "I apologize to the dead and their families that we haven't voted sooner to end this Holocaust in America," end quote. Now, Grayson, who's Jewish by birth, wound up having to apologize to the Anti-Defamation League for anyone offended by his generic word use of the word Holocaust. You know, Holocaust, small h. I don't know why the Anti-Defamation League feels that they have an exclusive franchise on that word. They do not. There have been many Holocausts committed by people, by governments, by movements. And the slaughter of 6 million Jews was certainly one of them. The slaughter of 9 million Africans was another. The slaughter of 20 or 30 million Native Americans was another. See, we can just go on and on. But he did apologize for the generic use of the word Holocaust. He has his education history. I'm not going to burden you with it, but is pretty astonishing. He is an attorney. He's graduated summa cum laude. For those of you who never learned your Latin, with highest praise. From, I think, Harvard Law School. I believe it's Harvard Law School. But he's a good guy. He and I are not going to talk about the situation in the occupied territories or in Jerusalem because it's an issue that I can't discuss with anyone at all, whether they are pro-Israel, pro-Palestinian, seek a two-state solution or one state. So those of you who think I may bring it up with Grayson, Grayson's been on the record as being very much in support, I believe I've got this right. I know Robert Wexler, another congressman from, retired congressman from Florida, who was Jewish also. I agreed with Wexler on everything except his position on Likud and what is happening in Israel. So for those of you who are anticipating a debate or discussion between Grayson and me about the situation in Israel-Palestine, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but that is just not on the agenda tonight. And it's not because I'm sure I'm going to get emails now. Why? Did somebody tell you you couldn't? It always happens. You know, nobody can tell me anything except tell me to stop using the GD and the SOB word because it's offending people out there in radio land, which I can respect. But other than that, no. Topics I bring up, nobody, no effing body tells me what to say or what not to say. No effing body owns this program or influences it. There are two people that own this program, Kathy Bay and me, period, end of story. So save your emails. I get that a lot. What's the matter? You can't bring up the topic? I can bring up anything I want to, but I'm choosing tonight not to bring this up with Grayson. There's no point. I want to talk to him about this other stuff, I want to talk to him about this healthcare reform. I want to talk to him about what we're going to do about China. Also want to talk to him about the next thing here, the next big thing that Obama's going to tackle, and that is reforming the most predatory capitalist enterprise in the history of the human race, and that is, among other organizations, Goldman Sachs and companies like that in so-called Wall Street that are destroying everything and everybody. So that's the agenda. Maybe at some future date I'll invite Wexler on or Grayson or somebody who is very, very, very pro-Israel, and we'll have a get down about Israel-Palestine, but it's not on the agenda tonight. All right. Mike from Connecticut writes, Mike, I'm old enough to remember when the Smothers Brothers show was taken off the air for letting Pete Seeger sing an anti-war song. How come the powers that be can get rid of a few comics because of a song, but let a total nutcase who is inciting possible assassination of the president stay on the air? Mike from Connecticut. Of course, I assume he's referring to this sick Beck or Limbaugh or the rest of them. Well, what happened, Mike, with Smothers Brothers, I remember that too. It was CBS that took them off. It wasn't, you know, there was no, I don't know what came from the Nixon administration. It probably did come from the Nixon administration. But the official story was that, that CBS decided to, remove them from the air. I can't think of a network today, that would do that, because the networks today, that would take people off for saying I'm getting confused here. There are networks today that would probably stop people from a left point of view, but certainly not from a right point of view, from the political right or neo-Nazism, which is what we're experiencing in this country. That's what corporate America is about. The corporatist attitude is the neo-Nazi attitude. So that's why people like Beck and Limbaugh and Crazy Eyes Malkin and O'Reilly and the rest of these swine will continue unchecked and probably unstoppable until the time comes when Limbaugh is caught with an underage boy or Beck is caught with an underage girl. That may do it. It is 7 minutes past the hour. This is the Malloy program. Alan Mark Grayson is an attorney who's currently serving as a member of the U.S. House from Florida's 8th Congressional District. That district includes just over half of Orlando, as well as Walt Disney World and a part of Ocala. He is a progressive Democrat. And in the 2008 congressional election, he defeated a four-term incumbent Republican to gain that office. If you want to know more about Alan Grayson, you can go to his website or you can go to Wikipedia. Wikipedia has some pretty good information about him. Alan, welcome to the program.
Thanks. I must say that it's kind of funny to be on the program. I listen to it usually on the way home in the car. I have Sirius in the car.
Yeah.
And I often end up flying home to Orlando on Fridays or sometimes Thursdays. And you're on. Sometimes Alan Combs is on.
Uh-huh.
So I'm usually in the car and I'm listening to you. And now I'm, you know, laying in bed, and it's the end of the day.
Well, good. Well, thanks. I'm glad to hear that. You know, if you fly AirTran, they carry XM, and we're. Oh, never mind. I was going to say.
Go ahead. We could use a shameless plug before we
that's
get some
sure.
more
sure. Might
to
as
matter.
Well. Might as well. What the hell? One of the reasons we wanted to get you on the air is your quote about the Republican healthcare plan. A, don't get sick. B, if you do, die quickly. Was a classic. I hope that remains in American politics to the same degree that some of the other more famous statements have stayed in American political folklore. That was a good one. However, now that it's been signed, now that it's been passed into law, as far as we know, and I have to tell you, I was in favor of single payer to begin with and kind of worked my way backwards to what we have now. I've got mixed feelings about it, but to me, it's a first step. And if the longest journey does begin with the first step, I think this one is sufficient right now, given what we're faced with in this country. But all of a sudden, now that it's all done, or at least this part of it's done, The crazies are coming out of the woodwork. This is astonishing. It's my understanding that at least, and possibly more, 10 members, Democratic members of Congress have been threatened. And I understand that perhaps you have been too.
Yeah, what happened in our case is that before the vote, when I was in D.C. and my wife and kids were in Orlando, I have five kids, before the vote, a woman called the house one morning, and one of my twins, five-year-old twins, clicked the speaker button, and she said over the speaker, she said, if you vote for health care reform, I'll kill you. Said this to a five-year-old. And my son went over to my wife and said, Mommy, there's a lady on the phone who says she's going to kill me.
Yeah. How do you deal with that?
Well, it's a little difficult since I still haven't been home yet. We were here all weekend, and
I managed
to miss four birthdays this week. My wife's 50th, my twins were five, and on the day of the healthcare vote, my oldest daughter turned 15.
Wow. I guess I should ask, how did your wife deal with it, with you gone?
Tender, loving care.
Yeah, there you go. What else can you do when a kid? I have a 5.5-year-old, and she pretty much understands what we do because our studio is in part of our home. So it's pretty obvious to Molly what goes on here. But, so far, nothing like that. And, I think that would be pretty shocking. What has caused this, Alan?
I think the Republicans have consciously tried to induce a national nervous breakdown. They're literally pushing the panic button over and over and over again for political purposes because that's the only way they know how to do it. It's fear and hatred, hatred and fear over and over and over again while we have a president who always appeals to people's better natures in contrast. But there's a large element of the population that's fallen under the influence of Fox.
Yeah, yeah,
and the
sure.
right wing,
yeah,
and they're just constantly living in fear. I actually, on the night of the vote, I went outside and walked among the demonstrators, and the ABC reporter told me I was actually the only member of Congress, Democrat or Republican, who did that.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw basically two Americas. I saw a lot of people there, notwithstanding what Fox told people, who actually had hope for a better future, and they supported the bill. And I saw another group of Americans that were scared out of their minds,
mm-hmm.
and they were against it. And the ones who supported the bill always talked to me about concrete things. There were several people, not just one person, but several people who told me, I'm dying. I'm literally dying. I can't work anymore. I'm too sick to work. I've lost my job. I'm not going to make it to 65. I need health care.
Mm-hmm.
And those are people who favored the bill. And then I had other people tell me about the road to serfdom and socialism and Obama's birth certificate.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all against the bill. So I think the reason why we're seeing this kind of threatening and violence and so on is because we have one party in America that makes conscious appeals to the dark side of human nature.
That's the part that is astonishing to me. I grew up in a family, mostly immigrants, who, when they came to this country, were, because of where they came from, they were inclined towards a more conservative point of view. They were Republicans, but they were Republicans who still respected the process and respected the idea of intelligent debate, looking at substantive aspects of a debate rather than this craziness. But something has happened. It's easy for a liberal like me to pin it on 1980 and the election of Ronald Reagan. I don't know that that's necessarily true. I know that when Goldwater was so soundly defeated that the right wing in this country decided, okay, we have to do something. And they began that long, I'm sure, arduous process of putting together think tanks and organizations and the ability to blast information to editorial boards and newspapers to get their point across, while the liberals kind of sat back and cruised and said, well, you know, we may be at war in Southeast Asia, but look how badly Lyndon Johnson kicked Goldwater's ass. We don't have to do anything. And the result is what we have now. But how did it, when did the Republican Party become like it is? I can't understand that.
Well, I don't even think there is a conservative party in America anymore. They're just anarchists. the only law they believe in is the law of the jungle. Whatever you're talking about, their answer is deregulate and nothing else.
Tax breaks.
Tax breaks and deregulation, that's it. You know, whether you're talking about energy policy or employment or health care or education, all they want to do is invoke the law of the jungle and inflict on all of us a war of all against all.
And the sad part to me is they do it for sport. They do it because they can. When you have media figures who are extremely wealthy, I mean, wealthy beyond the scope that most Americans could even aspire to. I'm talking about the Becks and the Limbaughs, people like that, who are extremely wealthy and do this for sport, incite people, playing on their ignorance, playing on their fears, playing on their bigotry and prejudices for sport. I don't see anything else that they get out of this except it's fun.
You know, I have five children, and I can tell you they go through certain stages. And when they're very young, there's this one little stage where they're experimenting with lying. And you can see it in their faces mm-hmm. because, you know, you're talking about a very young age.
Sure.
But they're sort of figuring out, like, when do you tell a lie, when do you not tell a lie? And I see the same thing on Bill O'Reilly's face every time I watch his show. Most of us grow out of it. Some of us don't.
Yeah.
And when he thinks of a really good one, you know, when he thinks of a very plausible lie,
right.
That's when he's most proud of himself.
Yeah. He gets that kind of little boy look of he's very pleased with himself. Look what I did.
Yeah, you know, they tried to nail me a few months ago on the show. What happened was they sent over a guy to try to videotape me mm-hmm. as I was leaving the office. And like every other night when I'm in Washington, D.C., we were working late that night.
Right.
So I didn't leave the office until, I don't know, something like past 9 o'clock. So he made it sound like I'd hold up in my office trying to avoid the camera, and he was some kind of hero for sending somebody over. And then he said, and isn't it true that Grayson always leaves his office around 3:30 after every afternoon? And I saw that look on his face. I saw the, oh, that's a good one look.
Alan, let me put
that's
you...
That's a good one.
Let me put you on hold for a second. We got to do a break here. We're talking with Florida Congressman Alan Grayson. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. We're talking with Florida Representative Alan Grayson, a Democrat. The other day when you were on CNN, I guess it was with Rick Sanchez. That must be a liberating experience. But you were defending the Public Option Act, which is also known as the Medicare You Can Buy Into Act.
I wrote it.
That you introduced, right?
Right.
And you said that individuals must have the opportunity to buy into a public insurance plan. And I think this is a quote. You said Medicare is only available to 1/8 of the population, which doesn't make any sense. It's this enormously valuable public resource that we own, we pay for, and we have to use for the benefit of everyone, which I completely agree with. Why did that not even get the kind of consideration that such an idea should get? I mean, it got no consideration that we out here in the public are aware of.
You know, even though I'm really on the inside and I go to the caucus meetings and listen to the people who actually make these decisions, it's hard for me to pin it down. I asked the speaker twice directly in the week before we voted on Sunday whether we could at least have a vote on my 3.5-page bill.
Yeah,
that would let anybody buy into Medicare at cost. You want it, you pay for it, you got it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the simplest possible arrangement. And we've been talking about the need for a public option. Every progressive in the country has been talking about this need, including you, for the past year. And I cannot tell you how it got left on the cutting room floor. There's a number of different possibilities. One possibility is that they felt so locked in to Senate parliamentary procedure mm-hmm. that they felt that they couldn't get it in under, you know, through that wedge. They might have gotten a legal opinion. Second possibility is that they've only got 41 people in the Senate to sign that letter calling for it, and they felt they couldn't get to 50. third possibility is that the White House, you know, in some secret manner torpedoed it. And as much as I have what really amounts to incredible inside information, I can't tell you which one of those theories is true.
Which speaks volumes about the secrecy that's it just prevails now. I don't care if it's Democrat or Republican, whoever's in the Oval Office. It's pretty hard to deal with, I would imagine, as a member of Congress.
Well, we put on quite a show. I think in the week leading up to the vote, we introduced the bill and we got 80 co-sponsors in a week. 90% of all the bills introduced in the House never get to 80 co-sponsors in 2 years. And we got 80 co-sponsors in 1 week. I worked on the floor every single moment that what we had time in that week leading up to the vote and talked to other members and buttonholed them and got the support of 80 of them. And I think there was reason to think earlier in the week that we might actually see that bill introduced as the third thing we were going to vote on that week. But the leadership basically reached the point where they tried to push any conceivable distractions out of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And, there's always tomorrow. We're getting more and more support for that every day, including from citizen co-sponsors.
Yeah.
Our website, wewantmedicare.com, has attracted more than 50,000 people signing our petition saying that they want to have a public option.
There is a theory that's fairly prevalent within some liberal circles that most of us are playing checkers and Obama is playing chess, that the overall plan of Obama is, 30 or 40 moves ahead of the rest of us, that I have a problem with that. But do you think that's true, that there is a chance? Because a 3.5-page bill, Medicare for All, would have been, to me, it would have... first of all, short-circuited any kind of craziness on the part of these right-wingers, that is every Republican in Congress. It is very easily fundable. I mean, it's already being funded. C, and it's a choice. I mean, do you want it or do you not want it? So do you, I guess to condense all that, because I got a break here another minute. By the way, can you come back after this next break?
Sure.
Okay. Do you think that Obama is playing chess while the rest of us are playing checkers?
No.
Oh, God.
I don't.
Oh, damn. So what you see is what you get.
I really have a very positive opinion of the president for one particular reason, which is getting back to what we were talking about before. He always appeals to people's better natures.
He does, yes.
And I really respect that in a political leader. I mean, I grew up in Nixon times. So I know the difference.
Yeah.
And I give him enormous credit for that. But I think this idea that the White House has some incredibly elaborate 8-year plan that it's executing on is really fanciful.
Really? Well, I could have gone all night without hearing that, but that's okay. I tend to drift off. I've said many times that any hopes I had for Barack Obama being a liberal progressive that have not materialized are my fault. They're certainly not Obama's fault, because when you go back to the campaign, all those things that I say he said, he never said. And it was just the ability of people like me, and apparently I am legion, common folk who were hoping, it's very easy to write on that slate and say, well, this is what Obama's going to do. No.
So you think of him like Chance the Gardener from the movie Being There?
There you go. All right, let me put you on hold. We'll come back in just a couple of minutes. We're talking with Representative Alan Grayson from Florida's 8th Democrat, liberal progressive. We're going to continue the conversation after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
The voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, we're talking with Florida Congressman Representative Alan Grayson. By the way, his website is congressmanwithguts.com. congressmanwithguts.com. It's not your usual website identifier. Usually it would say something like alangraysonforcongress.com. This says congressmanwithguts.com. Certainly get no argument with me about that. What?
Well, I was on MSNBC a few months ago, and they pointed out to me that there wasn't much competition for that URL.
That's, I wouldn't imagine. You probably got that one with no problem.
You got it for 99 cents. It was actually discounted.
Yeah, well, that's certainly understandable.
Nobody else wanted it.
I wouldn't think so. Well,
Rachel Maddow pointed that out.
Good old Rachel. God, I miss her. We worked together at America. Those are a million years ago. What's next? I want to move on to something else. I want to ask you about. But what's next, as far as you can tell? You know, check the magic. Remember those magic eight balls? You'd ask a question, turn it upside down. That's about the best we can do right now. But what's next with the health insurance reform? This is not health care reform. This has been health insurance reform. What do you see as the next step, or is this it?
Well, I can tell you we're working very hard to try to get H.R. 4789 passed and make sure that there is a public option, and I think it's going to happen. Two members of leadership, as cautious as they are, both told me that they thought that would be law within 3 years, and I said, why not within 3 months? Mm. So I'm going to keep pushing. I think another thing that's pretty prevalent on the thing on the subject is that we have to do something to actually enforce the rules that we're establishing that the insurance companies are going to have to abide by, and I'm concerned about that. You know, Michael Moore pointed out yesterday morning on Democracy Now that it's all very nice to say that they can't discriminate against you for pre-existing conditions, but $100 a day fine doesn't mean very much to them if you're talking about $100,000 surgery in order to correct a life-threatening condition. So we've got to be much better at making sure that people actually get the things that we've enacted.
Yeah, for sure. And if there's one thing that gets a person's attention, and the Supreme Court has ruled that corporations pretty much have the same rights as a person, it is, you know, a quick slap across the head with a metaphorical 2x4 in the form of a fine. $100 doesn't cut it. You're absolutely right.
I was actually in the courtroom when they decided that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was me and Mitch McConnell. We were the only elected officials in the courtroom. I've been monitoring it for months. And we actually introduced four bills, our Save Democracy bills, to try to, you know, sort of get the jump on the Supreme Court on this issue.
Right.
And then we introduced four more bills afterward. And I've been pushing the leadership very hard to make sure that we do something about that situation. Our website, savedemocracy.net, has 100,000 people who have petitioned to fight back against the Supreme Court decision, and we're only going to get one shot at it. You know,
right.
If we let corporations buy the November election and put in all their friends and get rid of all their enemies, we're not going to be able to reverse that anytime soon.
That's very true. I wanted to ask you one more thing, and oh God, it's gotten completely away from me about health care. Oops, there it flew by. Jesus, it's rough getting old. Oh well, it may come back. The next target, I'm understanding, of the Obama administration is the financial services sector, the economy, the people who have set Americans up to lose and to fail. And this has been going on. I think this is the third or fourth. What happened here last year is the third or fourth time in what the past 15 or 20 years. We had the SNL debacle. We've just watched people get wiped out over and over and over again.
Well, this is way deeper than anything that's happened before. I mean, I guess, I don't know if anybody else reads them, but we get regular statistics on the Financial Services Committee from the Federal Reserve about the state of the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to be an economist. I'm actually the only member of Congress who actually was an economist at any time in his career before I went to law school. I worked for several years as an economist. So to me, it's actually interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And we've never had anything like this happen since the Great Depression. Roughly a quarter of the country now has a negative net worth.
Mm-hmm.
They owe more than they own. And these are people, in many cases, who are still working. You know, they're generating
right.
income, but they are literally drowning in debt. They owe more on their house than the value of the house. And if you put all their liquid assets together, it's less than what they owe on their mortgages and on their credit cards.
Right.
That's never happened since before. Even in the 30s, people had a lot of trouble borrowing.
Mm-hmm.
And those who borrowed were wiped out very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But now we've got basically the financial walking dead in this country. The people who are really, really in trouble on debt and living from one credit card payment to the next and one rent payment to the next.
Mm-hmm. Do you see any chance that it wouldn't be called Glass-Steagall now, but it was 70 years ago that that act...
No, I think now it would be called the Grayson-Frank Act.
The Grayson-Frank, okay. The Grayson-Frank Act put into play that would separate these so-called investment banks, I don't know what the hell they're investing in, from just your plain old bank that handles loans and deposits and conducts itself like a business rather than as a casino. Do you see that happening?
Possibly. It's a little hard to say at this point, but I don't think we've really come to grips with one of the fundamental problems of that whole experience, which is that we've created this Frankenstein monster called the bank that's too big to fail.
Yeah.
And I think as long as we have that in existence, we have the possibility of endless taxpayer bailouts for worthless financial institutions that are themselves financial zombies with negative net assets on their own balance sheet. And I think if you're too big to fail, you're really too big to exist. So Glass-Steagall was useful in one respect, which was to prevent institutions from getting large enough so that they supposedly put the entire financial system at risk, and that's used as some kind of rationale for taking public resources and stuffing it in private pockets.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that Glass-Steagall was good at was preventing non-deposit institutions from borrowing from the Federal Reserve.
Right.
And the Federal Reserve, of course, with the power to create money, has to be rather selective in who they give the money to.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you have another source of endless bailouts that leads to depreciation of the currency. So under Glass-Steagall, only real banks could actually borrow from the Federal Reserve. Now we've reached the point where Goldman Sachs, which as far as I know has very few bank branches, I'm being kidding, they have zero.
Right.
Goldman Sachs is now allowed to borrow from the Federal Reserve. They can just call themselves, I mean, McDonald's can call itself a bank at this point and probably get away with borrowing from the Federal Reserve.
Mm-hmm.
So we've completely destroyed this fundamental distinction that we made between banks and casinos.
Mm-hmm.
And it can only lead to more tears.
What is a, in your opinion, I feel like I'm talking to Paul Krugman here, what in your opinion would be a short-term fix? There's so many people in this country, as you just pointed out, as we all know, that are really treading water, or to use the phrase, underwater. You know, I remember it was Paulson or Geithner, whoever used that term, too big to fail. And I think, no, it was before Geithner. It was during the Bush years, the end of the Bush administration. Something too big to fail. That went through me like a knife, because they never say that about working class Americans or people who have watched their jobs go overseas. You know, people are struggling to make a living, working class, middle class, whatever you want to call them. None of us are ever too big to fail.
Well, a lot of people ask the same question in their own minds over and over again. Where's my bailout?
Yeah, really.
And I think that's a good question. Why is it that we have enormous staggering resources to bail out failed institutions on Wall Street? I mean, the primary bailout bill amounted to almost $3,000 for every man, mm-hmm. woman, and child in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we have nothing to help people who have lost their jobs or becoming homeless, living in their cars, moving in with their parents. Have no health insurance. It's the impoverishment of an entire middle class.
Mm-hmm.
The middle class is being destroyed.
And this intersection of fear and loathing that right wing media promotes in this country, the Becks and Limbaughs and so on and so forth, that intersection of fear and loathing, loss of assets, whatever assets Americans had, and most of us did not have assets per se, the way they're looked at in some countries or in this country years ago. Our assets were equity, and our houses, all of a sudden that disappeared. But with the jobs gone, assets gone, fear and loathing being pumped into, just mainlined into the bloodstream of this of the society, at what point, for God's sake, who is going to make what decision to pull everybody back from the brink? I get real concerned about this, Alan. I mean, you know, this is my home, this is my country. I get very concerned about this avalanche that seems to be coming down on us.
Well, me too. I mean, why do you think I leave a wife and five young kids every week?
Yeah, yeah.
To go to Washington, D.C. and join the maelstrom.
You see light at the, oh God, I hate this, this metaphor. You see light at the end of the tunnel. Yeah, it's an oncoming train. Who said that back in the 60s or 70s? It's a freight train.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. It's very hard for me to judge at this point if things are going to get better or things are going to get worse. And that's, you know, part of what makes me show up for work each week. Sense of uncertainty and the sense of having everything in the balance, every conceivable thing, you know, the future of my children, my grandchildren, their children,
right,
for generations to come. I mean,
exactly.
You know, there's nothing that guarantees a good life for all Americans unless Americans make it happen. I've always believed that, you know, everybody's better off when everybody's better off.
Yeah.
I really believe that.
Yeah, and there was a time in this country where you could, in my lifetime, where you could actually believe that. Let me put you on hold again. When we come back, I want to ask you something about China.
Sure.
We're talking with Representative Alan Grayson from Florida's 8th. Go to his website, congressmanwithguts.com. We'll be right back.
Mike Malloy, do it for you.
Ten before the hour, we're talking with Alan Grayson from Florida.
Listen, Mike.
Yes.
Before you change the subject to China, there was something I wanted to bring up.
Sure.
And it's your show. I'm not trying to...
No, go ahead. Go ahead. No, this is very free form here. Go ahead.
Yeah, because I do get these statistical reports from time to time, I think there's one that I think you'd find particularly interesting. One little statistic, and I'm always interested to see people's reaction to this. The Federal Reserve gives us reports on the nation's entire wealth, the value of every single thing in the country, you know, every house, every small business, every large business, every stock ownership, every 401k.
Mm-hmm.
It's all there together in one document. And the national net worth in the 18-month period between June of 2007 in December of 2008, dropped from $62 trillion to $50 trillion in 18 months, the last 18 months of the Bush administration. So what that means is that we wiped out 20% of all the wealth that America had accumulated over the course of more than two centuries, and we wiped that out in 18 months. The amount of money that we're talking about here corresponds to $40,000 for every man, woman, and child in this country. So for my family of seven, we're talking about almost $300,000 wiped out in our national net worth in 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then Barack Obama was sworn in.
You know, it's shocking, but it's not surprising the damage that was done during those 8 years of Bush. And you know, not to let Clinton off the hook with the signing of NAFTA or the completion of NAFTA, but the combination of two Bushes and sandwiching around Bill Clinton. It's a wonder that any of us can still afford to buy groceries, and a lot of us can't.
Well, I don't think that we literally can afford to take another hit, and that's why I think financial reform is so important. But it's financial reform that has to be dramatic, with the idea of going all out to prevent what happened before ever happening again.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think about it, we haven't changed the law in any fundamental way. It's more than a year later. And in particular, nobody has been held responsible.
Mm-hmm.
There's not one person in Wall Street or in Washington who's gone to prison for the fact that we lost 20% of our national net worth in 18 months.
And you know, it's going to require a massive education process to let people understand or to help people understand what all this means. Most people's eyes glaze over. You know that when you start talking about anything that has to do with economics or the economy or derivatives, mine as quickly as anyone else's. It's going to take a lot of education to explain to people that no, you're never going to be an executive at Goldman Sachs where you're going to get a you know, a $5 million bonus, so you better work for reform. We only have about 3 minutes left, but I just wanted to ask you, I did not know until I think today or yesterday that every year The U.S. government is supposed to publish a list of those countries that manipulate their currency for the reasons that in manipulating currency, it throws askew the whole economic house of cards that we all pretend is real. And that last year, China did not get that designation, although they continue to do so. And I'm just wondering, at what point do you think, or is there a point where the Obama administration will, A, make that designation, B, respond by throwing some tariffs against this country that is, granted, we've been willful accomplices in this, but they're destroying us.
I think it's obvious that China's a currency manipulator. It's like saying, is the Pope Catholic?
Uh-huh.
Does a bear do what a bear does in the woods? I mean, it's perfectly obvious that they're manipulating currency, and they've been doing it for long enough, unfortunately for us, to accumulate $1 trillion of our assets.
Mm-hmm.
And we, in many respects, are now being held hostage to decisions being made by Chinese central bankers. They could crash the dollar tomorrow if they wanted to because of the accumulated errors of the administrations that you just referred to. The fact that under George W. Bush, we accumulated $4.5 trillion of debt in 8 years, and try to unfund, to wage two wars without even taking a stab at funding them while giving tax cuts to the rich. You know, eventually your mistakes catch up with you.
Yeah.
And the only question, I guess, is are we going to be able to work our way out of this hole? I don't think that the Obama administration is going to declare China a manipulator, even though it's perfectly obvious that that's exactly what they do every day.
Mm-hmm. Well, in tying their currency to the U.S. dollar is again, not to get to the eyes glass over topic, but it's an outrage. It screws with the dollar, A, B, but it is such a false representation of their money, and it continues to fool the American public into going deeper and deeper and deeper in debt. And like you just said, at some point, all this stuff catches up. I think my grandmother used to tell me that, you know, just before she would take a willow switch and lay it across my my backside for doing something wrong. I don't know what the hell I ever did, but grandma usually would find something. So. I hope we can pull out of it. When I say it, again, that nexus of all this stuff that is occurring, I mean, it is scary. You mentioned kids and grandkids. How many of us have that? I do. And I worry like hell. I worry all the time. What am I going to leave my kids and grandkids? And I'm not too pleased with what I see.
Well, we've grossly distorted our own economy by allowing the Chinese to steal manufacturing away from us through currency manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the trade statistics, and this is another thing I do from time to time for laughs, if you look at the trade statistics, you realize that there's only a few sectors left where we're even really competitive. There's aerospace, there's chemicals, there's entertainment, and that's about it.
Well, there's also raw materials. We're turning into almost the same as a third world country. Listen, we're out of time. It's congressmanwithguts.com. There's a fundraiser going on there. Check it out. If you've got some money, throw it into the hat. You may not agree with Alan Grayson on every position that he takes, but this is the type of person we've got to have to tackle some of these domestic problems we've got. Alan's been a real pleasure talking to you. I hope we can do this again sometime. Thanks for all your time.
Sure, I enjoyed it. I just hope somebody else did. It wasn't just me.
I've gotten a whole slew of emails here that are very complimentary. About just the, first of all, the relaxed tone of the conversation. Thanks, Alan.
Thank you, too, Mike.
All right, sir. Take care. Take care.
Good night.
We'll be back after the break. Do stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. 6 and a half, 7 past the hour. Malloy program. We're going to open the lines in a minute. If you'd like to call in, the number is 877-996-2556. A couple of quick emails here. Maggie in Mount Shasta writes, regarding the irony of Glenn Beck. She writes, Bush and Cheney would have had Beck arrested and waterboarded as a terrorist if Beck directed this type of hate speak toward them. Ironically, all the foul accusations, out of control spending, taking away freedoms and liberties, and being a fascist is exactly what the Bush administration was guilty of. You're right, Mike. I think it's time for us to demand that Beck and the other hate spewers be banned from the public airways and indicted for treason. This has gone on far too long. It is constricting our ability to deal with real critical problems, and I'm sick of it. Maggie Mount Shasta. But Tony in Maine writes in with a different point of view. Mike, I'm sorry, but I have to disagree with you on your call to have the government get involved in the removal of Glenn Beck from the airwaves, and also your call to have all these teabaggers rounded up and taken by authorities. No, I didn't say that. Okay, so right away, Tony, your second sentence, that's not something I said. He goes on, I'm not saying this because I've sadly become a Republican, I'm not furthering from it, but I worry about the slippery slope this will lead to. Not only will a move like this incite those crazy efforts, but it could lead to a movement that is much larger than it currently is. And don't forget, those of us on the left trust the government as much as these teabag freaks. All right, again, let me digress from this email. There is, you know, a lot of people say, well, there's always two sides to the same argument. Nobody's ever completely right. No one's ever completely wrong. I tend to disagree with that. If I just walk up to you out of the blue and start beating the hell out of you on the street, and you respond by fighting back, and we wind up in court, and my attorney is going to say, well, Your Honor, yeah, Mike was beating up on the guy, but he was beating up on Mike. You see what I'm saying? I mean, there's a ridiculous element of that kind of a point of view. Anyway, Tony goes on, and if the government suddenly gets into the game of removing people from the air due to one's political views, what's to say you and people on the radio who share some of your views will not be in jeopardy of getting pulled off the air in the future? Well, that's entirely true, but you know what? It's a risk that I'd be willing to take. It's one thing to criticize the government and say it's time for passive resistance, which is what I've said on this program. It's time for people to just sit down and say to hell with it, in much the same way that Dr. King did. That's one thing. The thing that Beck and these teabag monsters do is talk about hurting people, smashing windows, killing people, blowing them up, gouging their eyes out. I think there is a qualitative difference as well as a quantitative difference in what is being said on the left and on the right. Now, the radical left back in the 60s that used to talk about offing the pigs and so on and so forth, yeah, that was kind of out of control too. But they also talked about surrounding the Pentagon and making it levitate. Now, there's a slight difference in hippie freaks led by Abby Hoffman surrounding the Pentagon and chanting Om Shanti and trying to get the damn thing to levitate off the ground. There's a difference between that and cutting the gas line at somebody's house in the hope that the thing will explode and incinerate the family inside, don't you think? I think. We need to remember, Tony writes, that the corporatists still run the show here. Just because Democrats were victorious in this debate over health care doesn't mean the corporatists still don't pull the strings. I warned you before, back in February, that the government is targeting the teabag movement as a domestic terrorist threat. And trust me, it won't be long before they do indeed start to round these people up. As much as I hate everything those teabaggers stand for, the one thing that will make me defend them is the government trying to squash their anti-government message. Well, again, you know, an anti-government message, are there not matters of degrees? We live in a constitutional or a democratic republic, and there are rules that you play by, or you devolve into anarchy, murder, mayhem, chaos. And if there is a group of people in this country that are seeking that chaos, in contravention of all the laws over 230 years that we've all come to agree on, then I say what the law says. Free speech does not include falsely screaming fire in a crowded theater. Everybody always leaves off the word falsely. And free speech in this country, there are limits to free speech. There are constitutional limits to free speech. There are. I can't walk up to the next person on the street and get their name and then come back here to this studio and write on a blog or start declaring on the air that the person whose name I just got rapes children and is a murderer, or I'm in deep trouble for slander. I can't write about that sort of thing, or I can be sued for, what's the other one, slander and libel. So there are already limits to free speech. Come on. I would think that folks would understand that. There are certain things you cannot say. Here in Georgia, we have laws on the books that say you cannot walk up to somebody and try to incite them by insulting them, by calling them an SOB or an MFer or whatever term you want to use. You can't do it. Why? Because these laws are written, I think, not to preserve government, but to preserve some sort of order and mutual respect. Otherwise, the society deteriorates, and this is exactly what the teabaggers want. This is what Glenn Beck wants. This is what Limbaugh wants. They want to see this country go down in flames. They lust after it, in much the same way as a lot of people lust after a good lay. These people want to see murder and mayhem in the streets. That's what they want to see. So, Tony closes, just be careful what you wish for and beware of the wolves in sheep's clothing. Just my opinion, always respect your point of view, but this time not on the subject. Fair enough, Tony. I'll agree to that, but I will not change my mind on this one. No, absolutely not. It's one thing to debate and debate vigorously. It's something else again to hurl insults back and forth across the aisle in the Senate or the House. Okay, fine. But when you have members of Congress deliberately inciting people to insurrection, members of the media deliberately, not calling for measured, reasonable debate. Oh, no. Asking for anarchy and treason and insurrection and trouble and forcing the government, whether it's city, state, or federal, to respond. No. That is not the kind of discourse or the kind of interaction that results in a society where people are safe to express their ideas. I don't believe in suppressing ideas. But calling for the assassination of President Obama is not expressing an idea, for God's sake. You know, blowing somebody's house up because they voted for health insurance reform is not expressing a different point of view. It's advocating violence. And if you want to live in an orderly, not orderly, I mean, that sounds too fascist. But if you want to live in a respectful society where differing points of view can be discussed, then you find the people who are advocating violence and you kick their asses out. Now, if you disagree with that, I don't care if it's Tony from Maine or you know, Abe Snake. It doesn't make any difference to me. If you disagree with that, then shame on you. Shame on you, because there are limits, and there always have been limits to what we call free speech. You cannot advocate death and destruction and maiming and murder and overthrowing by force duly represented governments. I mean, I didn't call for that during 8 years of this murderous bastard George W. Bush. What I've called for is for people to sit down. Don't do anything. There's a difference. And like I say, it's a qualitative difference. We'll be right back.
They said, repent.
word. It's More Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Here on the Malloy Show. Let's do some phone calls. Oh, not one of these. Oh, for Christ's sake. Ed is in Bentonville, Arkansas. What?
What?
Come on. I'll give you about 30 seconds. Hurry up. Say what you... I'm misguided about the Nazis. Nazis were liberals. Nah, I'm not even going to give you that. You're out of your mind. Where do these people come from? Nazis were liberals? Kathy, why do you put a moron on my radio program? Huh? Why do you put a moron, a jerkwad who wouldn't understand? Oh, never mind. Why do I let people like that pull my chain? Half-wit freak. Nazis were liberals. What'd you want me to do? Just play with him? I don't like to play. You know, I am not like that cat we used to have that would get one of those poor moles out from in the woods there and bring it up the house and bat it around until he'd bite its head off. I'm not like that. I don't like those guys. Don't give me any more of those. Come on, Kathy. Damn it. All right. Let me try again. Don is in Washington, D.C. Hey, Don.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
All right. How are you?
Pretty good. Hey, I saw the news report in D.C. on Saturday, and it really bothers me that the teabag party did that to those congressmen.
Oh, yeah. It's awful.
I was watching the videotape, and I saw it was about 8 minutes long on YouTube, and it had Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. with his camera phone on. And I don't know, I didn't recognize the other guy. It might have been a staffer. It was recorded also. When are they going to release the tape showing what they did to the two congressmen, calling them the racial slurs?
Well, I think that a lot of that was captured by news cameras, and it's already out. I mean, you can see John Lewis, among others, with a look of shock on his face when he's called the N-word. This is a guy who fought for human rights, not just for black folk, but for everybody. I mean, when you get laws, when you work to have laws passed that are not laws regarding non-discrimination, they're not just for one group. A lot of people say, well, they're protected groups. That's just hog snot. Non-discrimination laws, non-discriminatory laws, laws that say people have to be treated with respect. Work both ways. So when you see someone like John Lewis being called the N-word and being yelled at, it's pretty disgusting, and it's a pretty rotten commentary on where we are in this country right now. Thanks, Don. I appreciate it. Where'd Paul go? Did Paul leave? Okay, Paul left. Tim is in South Dakota. Hey, Tim.
Good evening, Mike. This is the Rifleman. I haven't got in touch with you in several months.
Oh, well, hi.
I'm the old retired Command Navy Master Chief Special Forces type. And you've been discussing, talking about this fringe group violence and things that we're seeing from basically, how do I want to put this, south of the Mason-Dixon line is probably the old Civil War Mason-Dixon line.
That, right, right.
Yeah, you know what I'm trying to infer, I assume.
Sure.
And I think these people are trying to point back towards another Civil War with about the same battle lines drawn as the first one.
Well, I don't want to see that happen, Tim.
I certainly don't either.
A lot of these crazy people are in Utah, Montana, Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, South Dakota. It's not. I don't know. Wait. Stop just a second. I don't think it's a regional thing anymore. I agree that a lot of most of the crazy white people live here in the South where I live. I can walk a quarter mile from the end of the lane in front of my house and reach out and touch hundreds of these white devils.
Yes. And what you're seeing from per se 1859, 1860. To 2010 is a lot of those areas that you're seeing right now that you just mentioned, Montana, Utah, blah, 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 were territories at that time.
But Michigan wasn't a territory, and Indiana wasn't a territory. God, I can't get it said. No, I hear what you're saying, Tim, and I appreciate your comments because it gets me concerned, too. While, you know, there's a lot of unreconstructed Klansmen here in the South still, you know, this kind of bigotry and craziness is all over the country. I mean, take a look at the state of California. We'll be back after the break.
It's more Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. I've got a report card here from Kay Petrini, but I think we're going to hold off on it until tomorrow evening. But Prairie 2, our economic affairs correspondent, Bruce Enberg, has emailed in. He writes, the roller coaster ride to hell, the euro plunged today, driving up the U.S. dollar after Portugal, one of the pigs countries, had its credit rating downgraded. At the same time, rumors that Greece, another pigs country, will be cut loose rather than rescued. The pigs, Portugal, Ireland, Greece, and Spain, have been living on debt, credit derivatives, and neocon privatization, and it's time to pay the piper. The rest of Europe is terrified. Since they don't know how deep the rot goes, and this, of course, was all orchestrated by Wall Street banks. Remember when we were told that we didn't really need real jobs in this country because our financial services industry, quote-quote, would pay our way. You can bet the Wall Street firms that have been playing the inside line made a killing today on derivatives, with the U.S. dollar streaking past recent highs and destabilizing trade in oil, gold, and other commodities. Remember that I mentioned yesterday that J.P. Morgan was taking down the U.S. dollar, and I said it, if this is true, it would be a wild roller coaster ride. Well, it turned out to be not true and set people up to take the down position just as the U.S. dollar was poised to rise. The U.S. dollar spiking up is not a better turn of events, because the higher the U.S. dollar goes on the roller coaster, the faster the drop will be when it comes. The insiders will make a killing on that, too. Then they can afford to add another wall around their gated communities. These places already resemble feudal keeps, as really rich live in gated communities inside gated communities. This looting and pillaging is boiling over into the real international economy. And this is great for certain people and bad for the rest of us. Your typical teabagger chuckles over the plight of commie-loving Europeans, but they, the Europeans, are the only backstop we have when China cuts off trade and the pharmacy at Walmart won't be able to fill 80% of prescriptions anymore. The other 20% already come from Europe. So how many meds do you suppose the average teabagger takes? The answer? Not enough. prairienumeral2.com. Sorry for the sniffing. I'm not honking up lines. We have pollen once again in the Atlanta area, North Georgia Mountains. And with all the rain we've had this winter, it's pretty intense. So that's what that's all about. A lot of people say, oh, my God, he's sick again. You know, I'm not. I haven't had a cold other than for 24 hours since I started taking Epicor. Remember, am I talking about that? What was it, about 7, 8, 9 months ago, I started taking Epicor, E-P-I-C-O-R, every day. And I will be damned. It works. Epicor. Kathy got some kind of a sinus infection and just knocked the bejesus out of her for about 3 weeks. It just blew right past me. I think I had a day. What happens when you take this stuff, you still can get infected, but your immune system is so strengthened that, you know, people around you are sick for a week or two and you get it for a day, maybe 36 hours, maybe 48 if it's really, really bad. So if you haven't tried this, E-P-I-C-O-R, Epicor, just look at, do a Google on it. Look it up. It's it's just amazing. Who was it that told us about it, Kathy? I think it was somebody at our affiliate, our former affiliate. It's not there anymore, in Dallas. Texas. Epicor. Amazing. Amazing stuff. What else we got here? Oh, this is fairly short. Stephen Pizzo, who is one of my favorite writers, says today, after 6.5 decades on this planet, I've come to some conclusions. One of them is that roughly 15 to 20% of Americans are genuinely, provably, and incurably stupid. And while beauty may only be skin deep, stupid goes all the way to the bone. After a decade of failed governance, two unnecessary wars, and a ruined economy, Republicans had all but run out of enough moderately sane voters willing to take any further chances with them. That's when they glommed onto the idea of corralling America's moron demographic to plug the gap. But the ignorant are hard to sway with fact-based policy discussions or green eye shade budget details. They need to be energized with drama and plenty of it. Maury Povich and Jerry Springer knew that and built their fame and fortunes on knowing how to energize the dumb and dumber among us. It's all about the drama, baby. Tabloid quality drama is what gets their blood boiling. Allegations, the wilder the better, and the fewer contradicting facts, the better. For example, you don't use benign terms like end-of-life counseling with the moron demographic. Too many of them might just stare back blankly and ask, why would you want to counsel a dead person? Maury would advise death panels instead. Death is, of course, the end of life, and we're all going to be there someday. And as we approach that point of departure, I'm sure we and or our loved ones might appreciate and benefit from some counseling, including the morons. But by calling them death panels, counseling becomes even scarier than death itself. Now, that's how you get the moron blood boiling. Anyway, I belabored my point more than I intended. The bottom line is that the Republicans, in a desperate bid to retain power, has energized that 15 to 20% of genuinely and willfully stupid citizenry. And if we learn anything from modern history, from Germany circa 1930s, the former Yugoslavia in the 90s, to the genocide in Rwanda during the Clinton years, it's that once you get the moron demographic energized and they become an angry mob, it's impossible to control them. The early signs of trouble are already there. The ball's rolling, unless it stalls, and soon someone's going to get killed. Already we are seeing a rash of Kristallnacht-like incidents at Democratic Party offices around the country. To quote, several Democratic offices around the nation have been vandalized in the days surrounding the House health care vote. Vandals have struck the Tucson office of Representative Gabrielle Giffords, Democrat from Arizona, the Monroe County Democratic Committee headquarters in upstate New York, Representative Louise Slaughter's Niagara Falls office, the Knox County Democratic headquarters in Ohio, and the Sedgwick County Democratic Party headquarters in Wichita, Kansas. The local Rochester, New York ABC affiliate now has more information on the upstate New York vandalism, including an assassination threat against the children of lawmakers who voted for health reform. No one was inside when the brick was hurled through the Democratic Party headquarters on University Avenue. Attached was a note quoting Barry Goldwater, "Extremism, misspelled, of course, in defense of liberty is no vice." End of quote from media sources. Pizzo goes on. Representative Slaughter has been at the center of the push for reform. Last Thursday, she received a chilling recorded message at her campaign office. Quote, "Assassinate is the word they used toward the children of lawmakers who voted yes. The FBI is investigating." In search of a constituency, the Republicans sowed the wind, and now they and the rest of us will reap the whirlwind. It's incredible. I mean, 8 years of a real drift towards fascism. And because so many Americans were locked into the Republican mindset, they just refused to say anything as Bush lied us into a war, as Cheney set up the tension necessary to turn us into a country that tortures, as members of the Bush-Cheney Justice Department worked to not just pervert the law, but to make a mockery of it, and on and on. And the jobs that were run out of the country because of Bush's tax cuts and the willingness of the Bush administration to allow China to continue to purchase debt so that people in this country thought that they had assets, thought that they had equity in their houses. This was all during the Bush years. And not one of these cowardly bastards, not one of these filthy, cowardly teabag jerkwads had the courage or the decency to say anything during 8 years of the Bush crime family. But let an African-American become president and all of a sudden they come crawling out of the woodwork like so many roaches, like so many termites. And that's what they are, termites just eating away at the foundation of this country. You know, the appropriate way, I guess, any firefighter would tell you the best way to fight fire is with fire. I guess. But to think that we have such an enemy inside our own country, led by Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh and Sarah Palin and Bill O'Reilly. I mean, people, the leaders, these leaders who desperately want to see people dying, who desperately want to see people shooting each other because it is sport to them. These multimillionaire right-wing media types, they love it. They love it. And they're going to continue to do it. Nothing is going to stop them.
Spread your legs easy.
about 9 before the hour. Steve is in Fountain Hills, Arizona. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
Just fine. How's it going with you?
Fine. Hey, you made a comment earlier in the show about some public figure. I was running errands, and I forgot the details. Who was threatening to cut off benefits to veterans? And you made the comment. Well, maybe.
No, not on this show. I haven't said that tonight.
Over
huh?
to this person's house, and well, I
no, wait, Steve, don't just keep talking. That's not very polite. Okay, you said something, and I'm trying to correct you. I didn't say anything about cutting off veterans' benefits. So, the whole premise of your phone call is screwed up. What are you talking about?
Oh, well, sorry. I thought you. You make some sort of comment about having some folks go over to this person's house. I think you said seven of his friends or something, Mike. But
all right, Steve, I have no idea what you're talking about. But thanks for trying. I think you were listening to a different show and have confused things. All right, I didn't talk about people going over to someone else's house. I talked about a right wing. Teabag freak who decided to go after a member of Congress and published his home address, and it was the wrong address, and somebody went to the wrong address and cut a gas line. That has nothing to do with anything I could make out from what you were talking about. I have no idea what you were talking about. I'm sure it was important, but you got to get a little bit clearer than that. Ed in Beloit, Wisconsin writes, Mike, today I couldn't find any good news. Illinois is laying off state police and closing a few other stations. Members of Congress are getting threats. In fact, a very sick nutcase posted the wrong address of a congressman and his brother had his gas line cut. Yada, yada, yada. Damn, Mike, here you are trying so very hard to watch what you say. Oh, my God, Mike, if you make it through tonight without a cuss word that people complain about, I will send you a check each month of my Social Security disability till it equals 1 month of my pay. What? I get your point, Ed. Thanks. I understand what you're trying to say. I get it. What else we got? It's too late to do I was going to mention this. Did you see this video? I think it's at Crooks and Liars. Bush and Clinton. You talk about the gruesome twosome. Bush and Clinton. Obama sends down to Haiti to, first of all, these two are supposed to drum up charitable donations and go down to Haiti and make an appearance so everyone can see these two white guys wandering around in Colorville dispensing all the goodies that comes from white people, I guess. They went to one of Haiti's massive tent cities yesterday to, you know, do a photo op to remind donors of the immense needs facing the recovery effort. And then the BBC aired a video of Bush and Clinton's visit. And in this video, you can see Bush and Clinton shaking hands with dark-skinned people who are desperate, who are living in these tent cities, waiting for the white people. So they've been told the white people are going to swoop down and rescue them. You know, this is what white people do, right? So here's this shot, this video. Bush reaches into this enclosure to shake some dark-skinned person's hand. And he pulls his hand out. Watch his body language. It's just disgusting. He pulls his hand out and then half turns to Clinton. Clinton's all busy shaking everybody's hands. There's a lot of confusion. And George Bush wipes his hand on Clinton's shirt sleeve. Starting the shoulder, he wipes down to the elbow. And then he does it again. Trying to wipe off the film of sweat or the nigritude of the person who just shook his hand, something. I don't know what he's trying to do. Now, the person who said this to me said that Bush has a well-known aversion to germs and a tendency to use other people's clothing to clean himself off. Remember when he used the woman's shirt to wipe off his glasses and had an aide give him some hand sanitizer after shaking hands with Barack Obama the first time? Bush is a neurotic. He's a sick bastard, and thousands of people have died because of it. You know, Bush doesn't want to catch AIDS or hepatitis from the coloreds, no matter where in the world he has to deal with them, right? And that gesture sums up the Republican Party in one dramatic little tiny slice of video. There's Bush reaching over, shaking the hands of a dark-skinned person, then immediately wiping his hand on Bill Clinton's shirt. Yeah, Bush prefers happy Negroes, you know, dancing and playing music and bouncing a basketball and maybe even singing some hymns, huh? Oh, excuse me. That's what his mother likes. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.